You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. We are welcoming back to the show Kurt Meyer, who is Vice President of Business Development over at IBA, and I'm proud to announce an author in our most recently released edition of Mission Matters. Hey, I just want to say, Kurt, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Adam. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
So how do you feel? We're in a book together. We're bound by ink.
It's fantastic. You know, obviously the hard copy is particularly impressive, and looking forward to distributing thousands of them here after this podcast.
Yeah. Well, great to have you back on. And before we get into the content, before we get into The Reluctant Entrepreneur, the book, and also what you're doing at IBA, we'll take a step back and we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with what we like to call our Mission Matters Minute. So Kurt, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Kurt, what mission matters to you?
Satisfying the needs of veterans, particularly those transitioning from active duty, and really satisfying the needs of any business owner who's looking to exit through the sale of their business.
Hmm. Now you're, and thank you for sharing that. And a big shout out, of course, to our veterans. When we have many veteran entrepreneurs that we bring on the line, and I love to get your opinion and also your expertise from this. But I guess maybe let's just break down your. I know we did one episode in the past, but that was a long time ago, and we got a whole lot. We've been blessed. We have a whole lot of new listeners. So maybe let's start off by breaking down your background a little bit here. I know you have, you know, three different distinct professional careers. So maybe let's start there.
Sure, Adam. I am blessed by having three careers. My first career after graduating from Notre Dame was in the Navy as a naval nuclear submarine officer. And I had the pleasure of serving aboard the USS Robert E. Lee for 5 years in the Pacific during the height of the Cold War. And that provided a great foundation for me for the subsequent 40 years. Which transitioned from military career to a career in a Fortune 300 chemical company, Air Products and Chemicals, where I was in the industrial gas division, where we were selling products like oxygen, nitrogen, helium, hydrogen to a wide variety of industries. Started in the field in Phoenix, went to LA, spent some time in the corporate headquarters. Then I actually had an expat stint in Malaysia for a couple of years. Came back and took on increasingly responsible positions, running, for example, the global helium business for Air Products, controlled 40% of the production. And then finally, I got my M&A chops by rolling up the respiratory therapy industry for Air Products as a provider of care. And then after 20 years, I entered the third phase of my professional career. I became an entrepreneur. And have owned and sold several businesses in a variety of industries, from healthcare to industrial supply, to actually owning my own business brokerage firm prior to joining IBA almost 5 years ago. So again, military career, Fortune 300 career, and my favorite, being a vetrepreneur, an entrepreneur of the last 20 plus years.
I wanna stick in that transition from when you went into entrepreneurship a little bit longer, because when we talk about IBA, obviously we're going to get into some of the nuances of that, and so for that we may be talking about some more established businesses, right? When you're talking about the M&A side of things, but I want you to talk to those early entrepreneurs. And I don't mean by age, I just mean by like maybe they're just getting started. And it could be an entrepreneur, it could be a vetpreneur. Like talk to them for a moment. Like what was that like making the transition? Because it's different when you're out there on your own.
Absolutely, Adam. So when I made that transition, I was in my mid-40s. And so, you know, the light bulb went on a little late for me, quite frankly. You know, I had enjoyed my career with Air Products and had challenging assignments that grew me professionally to where I became a general manager and was familiar with all aspects of running a business. But, you know, making that transition is nerve-wracking. You know, I had a very comfortable position and a lot of security, et cetera. But I knew that I wanted to do something different. Rather than making shareholders rich through my efforts, I thought, why not I benefit from my own efforts? Why not I have the flexibility that I craved? You know, I had two daughters growing up. My wife's a professional, and one of us needed to do something different. I thought my wife would, but she encouraged me to, and it was the best decision I made. So, you know, that transition was a challenge because I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do. You know, when somebody says they want to go into business for themselves, you know, you have to have some sort of vision of what that is, you know, and hopefully it's something that plays to your skill set, you know, your knowledge, experience, and skill. And I would encourage entrepreneurs when they're thinking of becoming a small business owner to keep the lens wide open, you know, don't be focused on what you like to do. For example, when I became an entrepreneur, my friends warned me, you know, don't start a golf business from scratch. You know, 90% of startups, by the way, fail. So the way to become a small business owner, my best advice is either buy an existing business, an existing cash flow, preferably it replaces your corporate income immediately and is accretive day one, or buy a franchise, buy a new franchise. Because then you're in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and you have a proven business model. And if you execute, you're going to minimize the chance of failure, and you're going to gain experience over time, and those entrepreneurial juices will continue. And it doesn't mean that, you know, just because you become a franchisee, you have to stay in that particular franchise or that industry forever. I mean, as you get the confidence going, you can branch off into other opportunities, which is what was the case with me.
Yeah. If I could go back and I kind of think about it all, I'm like, man, I would have gone the franchise route or purchasing a business that was already established. Cause I didn't really know what I was doing and I didn't. And I think about the years that cost me and I'm like, I mean, I'm happy now cause Mission Matters worked out. Right. But there was some, you know, bumps in the road prior to that, but I'm thinking to myself like, yeah, even the training being, you know, around others that understand being part of a model, like all those other things, I think there's a tremendous amount of benefit that we don't maybe always think about, especially for speaking specifically to those newer entrepreneurs or those first-time entrepreneurs, the seasoned individuals like yourself who have, you know, been buying and selling businesses for years. That's, you know, that's just part of doing business, right?
Right.
So one of the things that we've had obviously previous conversations and as we've gotten to know each other, I know one of the mantras that I know you for is that, you know, your net worth equals your network. What does that mean? Like, what does that mean to you for our audience?
Well, I tell you, it starts with the definition of net worth. You know, if I ask you, Adam, you know, what is your net worth? You know, you're probably looking at me like, well, you know, it's none of your business.
Bring out the sheet.
You know, net worth is how you define it. You know, it it could be what your wealth is. It could be the wealth of your friends. It could be how you're contributing to society, all of those things. But if your net worth is significant, I can assure you that it's related to your network, meaning the connections, the people that you have in your life. And so that's why they're, you know, so intricately linked. If you have a good quality network of high quality individuals, that's going to help you succeed. I mean, let's face it, in life, it's not what you know. Okay. I mean, I was a 2.6 engineer at Notre Dame. I didn't know very much. Okay. But as I progressed, it was more about who I knew and recognizing that if I didn't know something about a particular subject matter, that I would enlist the aid of someone who knew it better and was not proud to bring those people in. So I learned that in the Navy. I learned that having relationships and a good network on board a submarine is an integral part of your success. Certainly in a corporate environment, all of those listeners and viewers out there realize that when you're a general manager in a large corporation or small corporation, that it isn't you. You know, you're the quarterback, but you can't be an expert in every single discipline. You can't be. I mean, you know, I like to think that in my profession, I deal with a lot of attorneys and CPAs, financial advisors. I like to think that I'm pretty knowledgeable in those areas, but I know my limitations. You know, as Clint said, you got to know your limitations. And so what you do is you bring in the experts. Yeah. So it's who you know, not what you know. So your net worth is certainly equal to your network, and I encourage everyone to build a very strong network from the get-go. I've shared that with my two daughters that I think have embraced that, and I can see that they're enjoying success as a result of building strong networks.
So that's a little bit in you building your network, and also, like, other than you're a golfer in your golf game, like, how do you maintain, how do you foster those relationships? How do they, cause you're exceptional at this. And I'm not just saying that cause I've watched you, you know, over the last couple of years, and I see things, and like, to, it's one thing to just build, but how do you maintain, how do you go deep other than obviously your golf game? Like what's your secret?
Well, I think that you have to invest the time with your network, and you have to demonstrate that that you value that relationship. I mean, it can be as simple as you know, noting a post that someone has on LinkedIn, and you know, not only liking it but making a comment or going out of your way to repost and reinforce what that person is saying. That deepens the relationship. It really does. And it takes time. I think the personal touch, I'm an old school guy. Okay. So I get a lot of handwritten notes out to people. You know, if I see something written in the Puget Sound Business Journal about someone, I'll cut it out of the paper and I'll pop it into a note card with a personal note. So, I mean, it has to be deep personal communication to people to deepen those relationships. And, you know, like, I love the way you teed this up because, you know, I can continue to add new people, but if you don't take care of the ones that you have established relationships with, and, you know, you're both benefiting from them, you're foolish, you know. It's like, you know, in business, you know, if you don't take care of your base, doesn't matter how many new customers you have, take care of your base first, take care of your network, nurture that network, you know?
I'm a big fan of this concept, and it's something I've been working on for, I'd say, maybe the last 5 years. And if I have one regret in business, it was that, like, I just had, I've had a lot of, and I'm not saying it's too late, but I've had a lot of amazing people that I've let out of my life that, you know, still could have been in there. And still, I just feel like personally, even not even on just business, but just on the personal side, I'm like, oh man, like, you know, what happened to that person? What happened to this? But now, I feel like with technology and otherwise, it's just so different. Like what you just now said, liking a post, sharing something, sending a quick message to somebody, especially if somebody's creating content, it's interesting because like when we post this or anything else, like other people are going to comment, they're going to say things about you. They're going to say, hey, Kurt, they're going to, you know what I mean? Like things come up and it just gives those touch points so that I'm old school too. I prefer, a note. I prefer, I mean, I write a lot of notes. I do a lot of things like that still. And I have my own cards and things like that, that I still do. But, But I'll tell you that even on the receiving and the giving end, the digital side of things has, I believe, made it more possible to have a larger network that can still be pretty deep. And it's created, like for me personally, another layer of that network, so to speak, which is interesting because I think that creates more possibility too.
You know, one of the things that I learned early on is that it's better to give than to receive, right? I mean, You've got to establish any relationship in building a network by asking to give something. You know, I believe in this book here.
Yeah.
You can see it, The Go-Giver by Bob Berg.
Oh, yeah. I'm a fan of The Go-Giver. Oh, for sure.
It is a wonderful book. I recommend it to all of your viewers. And, you know, what goes around comes around. You know, if you're thinking about approaching somebody because you need something, first thing you should ask them as you get to know them is, you know, how can I help you? Before you even ask for something, you know, you size somebody up, you take the steps to know, like, and trust the person, and then you ask, how can I help you? I mean, before you even think about asking them for anything. So I learned that early on, and, you know, been a good way to operate.
So Kurt, I want to jump around a little bit here. Let's dive into the book a bit. So The Reluctant Entrepreneur, when I saw the topic, when I saw some of the content, you obviously the different phases of your life, career, the successes you've had, there was a lot of things and a lot of different angles you could have taken and written about. Like why'd you go this route? So The Reluctant Entrepreneur, tell us some more.
Well, I think that most people are born, think that they're born entrepreneurs, you know, the Bill Gateses and Zuckerman, et cetera. I mean, these are people that are very young and they're destined to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I wasn't destined to be an entrepreneur. I was destined to be a corporate guy, right?
Yeah.
I served in the Navy, saluted, executed, got things done. Joined Air Products, executed, got things done. Mm-hmm. I never, ever thought about being an entrepreneur. Okay. The way that it developed, and I explained it in the book, is that my wife and I, my wife also being a professional, we realized that having two daughters, that it required a lot of effort and time in parenting. And for both of us to be traveling so much and consumed by our jobs, one of us had a cave. One of us had to one of us had to take the lead with the kids, and one of us had to continue putting the food on the table, right, as a W-2. So we came to the conclusion both of us didn't need to be W-2s. I initially thought my wife might want to stay at home with the kids for some period, but, you know, she really enjoyed her job, so she had no intention of staying at home or you know, getting away from her corporate job and perhaps being a CPA where she could enjoy the flexibility. She basically flipped the roles. You know, she said, you know, why don't you do what you like? Why don't you take what you've learned, and why don't you, you know, find something that you want to do and do it your way? And you know, I just thought that I was going to continue with Air Products till I was 65, retire and drop dead, because that's what men do, right?
Yeah.
And she flipped it. She said, you know, I'm giving you the freedom to consider doing something else. And so that's why there was a reluctance. I mean, I didn't want to jump in because I was fearful, quite frankly, to be honest with you. I mean, what if I failed? I mean, I was very successful in the corporation. Why would I want to try something and potentially fail? I mean, I wasn't sure if it was my ability that made me successful or all the great people around me.
True, the system.
And so when you become an entrepreneur, believe me, you're on an island, you know? And so that's where the reluctance came from. It was reluctant to give up a really great position and, you know, take that leap of faith and go off on my own.
What do you hope the readers will get out of this? Like, after the, you know, they get through it, they're reading it, like what do you hope that some of the takeaways are?
Well, I think when they read it, it's going to confirm what is in their gut, which is the same thing that's in my gut, and that is why am I waiting? Why am I working for the man so long?
Yeah.
What can I do to take control of my life and be a small business owner? And in the book, you know, I clearly state that there are three options. Hmm. One, you can start something up on your own. 90% chance of failure.
Yeah.
Two, you can buy an existing business. And three, you can buy a franchise. And so I would encourage the viewers to reach out to me and say, hey, how can you help me become a small business owner? I mean, tell me the pros and cons of buying an existing business or a franchise. And that kind of transitions to where I am now with IBA, because that's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
I work with people who have a desire to control their life. And I share with them the opportunities, both existing businesses and new franchises, that can get them there. And I'm telling you, it takes maybe a year or 2 years at most to really feel comfortable as a small business owner and, you know, enjoy the benefits, replace your corporate income, have the flexibility to do what you want to do in life. And, never look back. So yeah. I hope that I inspire them to kick the W-2 job behind them and get on with life. How do you get to the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs and become self-actualized if you continue working for the man forever? You don't.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Having said that, I have a lot of friends that enjoy great careers as executives and corporations, and they find enjoyment out of life in other ways. They contribute to nonprofits. They lend their talents to other entities, their church, political affiliations, etc. So I'm not saying that everybody in a corporation is a loser by any means. Okay,
of course.
If you have that desire to step out on your own, do it. Don't wait. Don't wait 20 years like I did. Okay, move ahead smartly and enlist the assistance of people who've been there and done that. Again, you know, reach out to, you know, who you know, because you don't know much about small business ownership until you approach somebody that's been through that.
Yeah. What do you like about your niche with IBA and helping others with businesses? Like what brings you enjoyment there?
Well, as we led off, you know, the mission at IBA, we're a sell side firm. So our mission is to work with the owners of privately held and family owned businesses in the lower middle market. That would be businesses with enterprise values between $1 million and $25 million, transition via exit via sale. So ensuring that that is done really, really well. So that's the primary mission. However, you know, it takes a buyer to do a deal. So we work with buyers. And many of these buyers are first-time buyers. You know, here in Seattle, it would be folks that are working at Microsoft, Boeing, Amazon,
that
are tired of working for the man and want to do their own thing. And so, you know, guiding them into the right fit is critical. You know, understanding what their skill sets are, understanding what they can bring to a business, and then, you know, matching up the criteria that they're looking for. What kind of income do they need? What kind of growth do they expect? Do they want to build it and hold it and make it a generational business, pass it along to children? Do they want to grow it and flip it because they're more builders, you know, than harvesters?
Yeah.
So, you know, working with people to find that right fit is very fulfilling. It really is.
Are you, how does somebody know? Like you've talked to, so there'll be some people that watch this, like for example, like that work at, you know, Microsoft and Amazon's and all these upper management and these corporate individuals that maybe they've always kind of had that itch or that thought, but like, how have you found that like somebody knows, like, it's like, okay, yeah, this is something I should really explore.
Well, there's no substitute for doing due diligence. So let's take the case of somebody that's looking at an existing business. What we first do is we give them an overview, basically a teaser of the business. You know, what is this business all about? What industry is it in? And what will you as the owner, what will your day-to-day look like? You know, are you going to be working with people? Are you going to be working more on the operational end and sales and marketing end? That kind of thing. So, you know, really giving them a feel for what they're going to be doing and then encouraging them to have a meeting with the owner to ask the owner, you know, if you were me taking this business over now from the current condition, what would you do differently or what additional things would you do? Or, you know, what skill sets are you lacking that I might bring to this business to bring it to another level? So doing due diligence is critical. On the franchise side, there's a wonderful opportunity to do validation by talking to other franchisees that have been in the system for a long period of time. So I encourage them to do the kind of due diligence by either physically visiting those locations or certainly having conversations with the franchisees. And the franchisees are very open to sharing all the details of the business. Mm-hmm. You know, what is their relationship with the franchisor?
Of course.
You know, how long did it take them to reach break even? What kind of money are they making? What are their future plans? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun, you know, for these folks to look at opportunities, either existing businesses or franchises. Mm-hmm. And it will just fit. A light bulb will go on. Something that they find out will get them excited.
Like they probably can't get the idea out of their head, right? Like that's how I'm envisioning it. Like it's like they can't let it go. It's like once you know something, you can't unknow it.
Exactly. So
what's the timeline look like? And I know that's going to vary obviously, but like, I mean, range, what is time like? Have you seen somebody maybe making this, the transition from corporate to either whether it's owning franchises or buying a business? Like what does a timeline look like?
Yeah, this is good. My timeline, the timeline kind of depends on your personal situation. If you're financially secure, if you've got a wife that's providing some income or whatever, you can take the time to find the right fit. And, you know, some people, it takes years to find the right fit, quite frankly. Sure. They overanalyze things, et cetera. I mean, I was on that route for a while. I was overanalyzing things. I was overly concerned, et cetera. But I would say typically if I'm thinking of somebody I'm working with right now, you know, they made the decision, you know, over the holidays, hey, we're going to change our life. I'm going to find something. I'm going to work with Kurt to do it. I would say that it'll probably take about a month or so to find the opportunity that they want to pursue. And then it'll take about another month to negotiate a deal. Yeah. And then it'll take about 2 months to be able to close it and get in business. So, you know, if you want to move into something, the time frame can be rather quick. It can be 1 to 4 months, you know, if you want it to be, especially if you're working with skilled advisors like we have at IBA that, you know, are your advocate. I mean, when we work with a buyer, we're looking for the right fit for them. We're putting our compensation aside. Okay. We're looking at them like family members. Like, what would I suggest for my brother?
For sure.
And we're presenting the existing business option, the pros and cons, and we're showing them the new franchise option. And we're taking them through that every step of the way. And whatever the right fit is for them is fantastic.
So let's kind of address that from maybe the sell side of it too. So let's from the business owner side point of view. So somebody's, you know, they're watching this, they're thinking about it. They're like, man, it's been on my mind for a long time. Maybe we need to start this planning thing of succession, whichever route it's going to go, right? Whether, but I feel like that conversation, especially right now, based on the age demographic of many business owners in the country, preparing for whatever the succession plan is going to be is top of mind for many. Give me some, I won't say timeline, but give me some scenarios because that's a broad question.
Sure. Oh, this is right in our wheelhouse, my friend. Yeah. So right now, Think about being an owner of a business that's successful. Mm-hmm. So you're enjoying the business. You've built it over a period of time. You're making good money. Why the hell would you want to sell it?
Yep.
Okay.
It's finally working, right?
Exactly. You know, so, you know, quite frankly, at IBA, our biggest challenge is to have inventory for buyers to look at.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you have a good business, it's hard to get somebody to sell it. So the ones that are selling it typically, and you mentioned it, it's the demographics, it's older folks. I mean, the typical scenario is, you know, a 70-year-old owner, mm-hmm. you know, is having his financial review with his financial advisor, mm-hmm. and the subject of retirement or moving on comes up, and, you know, the financial advisor will say, well, you know, what's your plan? And, you know, he'll say, well, you know, I don't have any family members in the business, so there's no mm-hmm. succession plan, so I guess I'd sell it, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where we come into play. So what we do is the first step is to, for any business owner, they should understand the value of their business. Okay, so mm-hmm. let's look at this 70-year-old that owns an HVAC business, right? Heating, ventilation, air conditioning. So let's assume the business is worth about $5 million. He's got, you know, 15, 20 employees. Mm-hmm. And the first step is for us to do the business evaluation, confirm that, yeah, it's worth $5 million. Mm-hmm. And the financial advisor says, hey, you know, we can use that $5 million to ensure a nice retirement for you. And he decides to engage us. So first step is to do the evaluation. That takes a couple of weeks after we get all the information we need, which would be tax returns and copies of leases and employee agreements and such. And then if he decides to engage us, it would take about 3 to 9 months to sell that business. You know, mm-hmm. we would first go to our database of all these buyers that are looking for businesses like that. And I can assure you,
which is a tremendous advantage, by the way, because you have that database in both sides. So that's different. You already, I'm guessing here, but correct me if I'm wrong, you already have certain relationships and certain matchmaking that you've been, some of them working on for possibly years. Am I off on anything that I said?
No, you're right on the mark. I mean, you know, it's such a seller's market. If you have a profitable business, there's a tremendous demand. I mean, right now, sitting here right now, I've got 10 times as many buyers as I do opportunities and such. So at any rate, we tell the owner that, you know, if you engage us within the next 3 to 9 months, we're going to sell and we're going to achieve the price that you're looking at and such, and we're going to effect a smooth transition. And by engaging us as the intermediary, we are going to control the process. We're going to ensure that the buyer keeps things confidential. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the proper vetting of the buyer to make sure he has the ability to do the deal, that he's got the financial wherewithal to do it, and that he's motivated, that he's not some tire kicker that's going to waste everyone's time.
Yeah.
And our business model, which is 100% performance compensated, goes right along that arena. You know, we don't want to waste our seller's time,
our time,
anybody's time. So at any rate, what our job is to create that competitive marketplace for the owner so that we can obtain several offers for him to consider so he can choose the right buyer that's going to take care of his employees, very important to him, his customers, his suppliers, and his legacy. You know, we this to be a win-win. And, you know, that sounds trite. Oh, yeah, win-win. No, we really want the buyer to win, even though we're representing the seller, but we want that buyer to feel good. And we want this deal to be fair. You know, if we tried to sell the buyer something that was, you know, unrealistic.
For sure.
We could sell ice to the Eskimos. I mean, we can get a buyer interested in any of our businesses.
Yeah.
But if we can't convince his team, the buyer's team, meaning the lender who's going to stand behind the funding, you know, his CPA that's going to do due diligence, the attorney that's going to draft the purchase and sale agreement, then we're wasting everyone's time. So that's where the IBA differentiation comes in. I mean, we have the knowledge, experience, and skill to get this done for both parties and come up with a win-win. And we're only paid a success fee at closing, so we better do it well or we're going to starve.
Yeah. Well said, Kurt. And I'll tell you, first off, it's been great having you back on the show. I'm excited to continue to promote this book with you, to talk and just kind of build the relationship. Speaking of network and speaking of building relationships, it's been great to have you in our Mission Matters community, and I look forward to continuing to build. But that being said, I mean, what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for your business plans? I mean, you know, I got to ask that question. What's next? I know you don't stay still.
God knows. God knows. You know, I retired a couple of times unsuccessfully when I, you know, when I left Air Products, and then when I sold my own business brokerage firm, I don't know, 6.5 years ago. What's next for me? Right now, what's interesting is I'm considering an opportunity to be a technical advisor on a full-length feature film in Hollywood on Submarine.
That's what I'm talking about. I knew you had something up your sleeve.
Yeah, there's always something I'm doing. There's also a company that the owner of IBA and I are kicking around. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but you know, the entrepreneurial
It's just
there,
me and so. You. It's nobody else. It's, we're not recording and distributing this to a million people. It's fine.
No. No, but when we're ready to launch that, I'll come back on your podcast with, you know, Gregory. At any rate, there's always things, irons in the fire. You know, once you leave the corporate environment and the entrepreneurial juices start flowing, you can't stop them. And you know this because you're the same, you're cut out of the same cloth as I am. So God knows, stay tuned and we'll remain close.
Amazing. Kurt, if people, if there's some, you know, business owners out there that are, you know, thinking about selling or even individuals thinking about purchasing or otherwise, I mean, how do people connect? How do they learn more about IBA and you and your team?
Well, certainly I invite anyone to go to the IBA website, which is quite simply www.ibainc.com. It is a robust website. You have all kinds of resources for buyers, for sellers. There is a blog library that just is awesome. Articles to support small business owners that appeals to buyers as well, you know, giving insights into examples of people that have left corporations and become successful small business owners. So going to IBAinc.com makes sense. Reaching out to me on LinkedIn would be fine. I mean, I'm more than willing to make room by maybe eliminating a few folks that, you know, to make room. Unfortunately, LinkedIn limits me to 30,000 connections. And so for the last 15 years, every time I try to add somebody, I've got to delete them. But the lesson there is LinkedIn is for business only. So if I eliminate somebody, it's not because I don't like them. It's because they don't add as much business value as the next person up, right?
Oh, so. I love it. I love it. Well, Kurt, first off, I'm so happy to have you back on the show. Excited to promote the book, the audience, everybody tuning in. Hey, if you haven't hit that subscribe button, hey, just to let you know, this is a daily show. Each and every day on the podcast, we're bringing on new business owners, entrepreneurs, executives. We're creating a bunch of content and goodwill out there. We'd love for you to take part. Hit that subscribe button, and we'll put IBA's information, Kurt, all that good stuff in the show notes, so you can just click on the links and head right on over. Kurt, thank you so much time, and can't wait to the next time we get to do this.
Okay, take care, Adam. Good talking to you.